Support for Aspen Public Radio comes from Balcom & Green PC, a full-service law firm with offices in Glenwood Springs, Aspen, and Basalt, providing advice and solutions for their clients' legal needs throughout Western Colorado for more than 60 years. Learn more at balcomgreen.com.
Good afternoon from Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bechtesh, and this is Valley Roundup. Thanks for tuning in. Today, I'm joined by Rick Carroll, managing editor with the Aspen Times. Hi, Rick. Thanks for coming in.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Also here in the studio is Paul Mentor, columnist with the Aspen Daily News. Hi, Paul.
Howdy, Allison. How we doing?
And then joining us by phone is Matthew Bennett, reporter with the Glenwood Springs Post-Independent. Hi, Matthew.
Hello. How are y'all?
We're all good, right?
All good.
All good.
All right. Welcome to Valley Roundup. Rick, I'd like to start with you and a story about a shakeup at Aspen Skiing Company. A 17-year employee, Derek Johnson, has been let go. What is our understanding of what he's being accused of?
Well, apparently Derek was either asked to resign or fired within the last couple of weeks. There's a distinguishable difference, and nobody's said what yet.
Okay.
From what we understand, he's been accused of selling SkiCo boards, bindings, and skis on eBay over the years. How long this went on, we don't know. There's a criminal investigation underway.
So taking items that should be sold in the SkiCo Four Mountains stores or something, and instead offering them and pocketing that money directly online?
Well, that's a good question. It's not clear if it's rentals or brand new or both. So these are things that there are a lot of people asking a lot of questions. It's eventually going to come out through search warrant findings.
Okay.
And it appears that some type of charges are imminent, but right now nothing's happened.
Okay. You also said there's a distinction if it's a firing or a quitting. Is that for like severance reasons or just like fault? We'll learn more about kind of who made the call.
Well, if you resign, you preserve rights. Mm-hmm. But if you're fired, then you lose a lot of rights. We did not report that he was fired because we don't know that for a fact.
Okay.
But a lot of times it's like he resigned, wink, wink, but he was fired.
Absolutely.
Or she.
Yeah, it could be a constructive termination. I think that's the term they use when they ask you to resign rather than just come out and terminate you for cause.
Giving you that favor of still having some of these rights.
And you save face, you don't have a termination on your resume, you know, it's easier to find another job, those kinds of things. And I think would be in play there. So, but it was really a shocking story to read.
And it's not, I think, a story that you would read about just anyone who's getting fired from their job, but the tenure that he had, the fact that he's also a football coach, you know, he's also a leader in the community in another way, and the Aspen Skiing Company, kind of like family image, I think, all three of those things combined rattled.
Aspen City Council, too, former Aspen City Council member.
Yeah. Yeah, very, very well respected. If you go back and read the letters to the editor when he ran for mayor, people were highly complimentary of him. He's a family man, and we don't know all the facts yet. So he really is innocent until proven guilty, but people want to know. SkiCo's not going to talk. That's their right. But the cat got out of the bag this weekend, I think. Word was going around.
Okay.
And so we'll see where it goes. I think it's interesting that two people under him were also fired. From what I understand, they were told that the company's restructuring, but you would imagine there might be some culpability in there, but the attorney for one of the fired people said SkiCo said this person had nothing to do with it. Now you look above him.
Okay.
SkiCo reorganized their management last year, and they put John Rigney in who's been a head of special events in charge of several departments. And retail fell under his purview. And I'm not making any insinuation about anybody above him. I don't know. We don't know what we don't know. But
right.
It's just interesting that
you get a new manager,
as of now,
someone starts making some counts. And
yeah. So
Matthew, I want to switch over to a story that you've covered. River Bridge has a new location in Glenwood Springs. Can you tell me a little bit more about what that facility does?
It's a great new facility for Glenwood Springs, and they're not going to be doing too much different than they already were. It'll just pretty much be a new location that'll be able to facilitate more patients without clients literally kind of being on top of each other, if you will. The other thing, though, that this new location will offer, kind of because of the location, but also because of new laws, is that adult victims of a sexual assault can come forward anonymously and still receive treatment. And it was just a wonderful story to cover. It was very sad, some of the stories, but the hard work that these nurses did prior to this, oftentimes in borrowed space, volunteer capacity to help these victims. I think everybody in the community really saw the great work that they were doing and really wanted to get behind this. And now it's a reality, and they'll even have their own Frazier, the facility dog, to also help provide a kind of a calm, neutral presence throughout what I can only imagine would be such a difficult process to go through.
Let me clarify a couple of things that you just said. So prior to this, were you able to make a sexual assault claim, but you couldn't do it confidentially? Is that what was happening before? Like, why is this new facility going to help with that?
So basically in 2012, the Roaring Fork Valley had a SANE program, and SANE just stands for Sexual Assault Nurse Examiner. But that closed, and it basically left people who had been sexually abused with very little options. Oftentimes they would have to go to Grand Junction or Frisco to get these medical examinations and evidence collections, if you will. And then in 2016, though, the Mountain West SANE Alliance conducted its first SANE examination in the valley. But again, it was sort of in borrowed space and in a volunteer capacity. So what this new space will really allow is for more victims to come forward, but at the same time, because it's not really associated with a big hospital, one of the things I had talked to the executive director, Ms. Chapman, about was she felt that because it was separated from a hospital, she felt people may be a little bit more willing to come forward, just for the fact that it was a smaller facility and the treatment would be very personalized, I believe. And they were just really, it'll serve us also Garfield, Eagle, Pitkin, and Rio Blanco counties. And at the event, you could just see the community out in full force, everybody from the commissioners to the, you know, the district attorney to just locals. And it was a celebration, but at the same time, it was, you know, for a tragic but necessary cause.
I have another clarification to make, because River Bridge played a role in the elections this fall in Pitkin County, the sheriff's race. There was a comment that Walter Chi, the challenger to incumbent Joe DeSalvo, made when someone reported some information to him. He sent that reporting party to River Bridge, or he named River Bridge as a place you could go. And Sheriff DeSalvo said that means that Walter knew this had to do with an underage person. And that story is still continuing as we learn more about the alleged assailants in that case. But is River Bridge always just for children? I mean, this new facility allows for adults. How much was that kind of a smoking gun in that situation?
You know, that's a good question. I think it wasn't as much of a smoking gun as it may have been out. I'm not too familiar with that case, to be honest with
sure.
you. I had the executive director emphasize that they were still a child advocacy center, just like they had always been, and that their services had just kind of expanded to this other physical space. But she did really highlight that adults over the age of 18 who had been assaulted could come forward anonymously. And they're still, you know, having just opened their doors in this new facility, she wasn't sure, you know, how many more adults would come forward.
And it's so interesting to me that a facility alone, like the physical space, can make the difference between someone coming forward or not. Because obviously, in a community as small as the Roaring Fork Valley, if you walk in to a place where that's what they do, and you see someone that you serve at a restaurant or that you know you work with or you teach their kids, well, they're gonna know why you're there. So it's a big eye opener for me that like a separate hallway, a separate door, can make the difference in a case like this.
Absolutely. The thing that she was literally saying was, you know, before it was, you know, I think I have a direct quote for her saying, you know, our mental health clients and our medical clients were running into our forensic interview clients, and there was just so much happening at the same time that they really did not have the space to be able to handle it confidentially as much as they would like. And I had the pleasure of going to see the space when it was being renovated, and going in, I believe it was last Thursday, it was just, it was a remarkable new location, and, you know, we'll see. But I'm sure the community is very appreciative of the work of all those saints, particularly during the time, you know, between 2012 and 2016 when there was that gap and they were still trying their absolute hardest to facilitate as many patients as they could.
Mm-hmm. And this is one of those things where it's kind of a counterintuitive, but we hope to see more cases reported. I mean, that's a good case scenario if we start getting more reports. Did you get to meet Fraser, the therapy dog?
I did. It was a it was a really, really sweet dog, and it was just, it was part of the ribbon cutting ceremony, and they really made the dog out to be, you know, part of the team. And you could probably you know, one could understand why. You know, it's one thing to be staring at a doctor, even in just a clinic, but the minute, like, you know, a dog comes in, it's, you know, it's just a, like she said, it's just a calm, neutral presence that can be added throughout what I can only imagine is just something you can't even put into words, really.
Well, Rick, I got dogs into Valley Roundup, so I hope we get a lot of hits this week. Paul, I'm going to try and get skiing in as much as possible as well. This week, the Aspen City Council said if the public agrees for Gorsuch House and Lifwin Lodge to be built at the west base of Aspen Mountain, we will give some money for that. What do you think about that?
I'm very encouraged to hear that they've got an agreement in principle. You know, I guess they still have to draft the ordinance and review it, and there's still opportunity for discussion before the council acts. And then, yes, because of the kind of development it is, it's going to the voters in the March election. So we'll get to have our first experience with electioneering during ski season, which I think was maybe an unintended consequence of this effort to try and involve more people in the election process, because it puts it right in the middle of when everybody's trying to enjoy themselves and all the visitors are here. And, you know, I'm sure they don't have any interest in you know, Aspen's election issues, political issues. Maybe they do. Some of them do. But I think it'll be fun to watch. I hope it goes forward. I think it's about time. When I first – the first day I started with the city of Aspen – you know, Steve Barwick came to me and said, we're doing some really exciting stuff, and, you know, they're going to be redeveloping the, you know, the Lift One side of the mountain, and we're going to be able to be involved in that. It's going to be a fun process. And that was 16 years ago and about, I don't know how many false starts ago. So it would be nice to see that finally get a community solution that everybody can get behind, or that the majority of people can get behind at least.
So redeveloping that side of the mountain, you think that is worth city money?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Why is that?
There are a lot of community-based improvements that are associated with that. I mean, that area is not zoned for a lodge, but the city wants a lodge, and they've asked for a lodge, and then they come back, and then development community comes in with locally owned people, the Gorsuch family, and, you know, and they provide a lodge, and then they say, well, that's not enough. So can you do all these things? Can you bring the chair down the mountain? Can you give us a museum? Can you move this building? Can you reconstruct this street? Can you do these things? And they've come to an agreement. And I think that it is appropriate for the city to be involved at a level where those benefits, which are community related, are in part assisted to be funded by the city. And that's up to the city and the developers to come to that agreement. But yeah, in short, yes, absolutely.
Also, in your column, you mentioned this council's legacy, their decision-making process, and what this kind of leaves. A phrase that I hear all the time is development pays its own way in Aspen. I don't think I've seen that happen, though. That's not what's happening here, is it?
You know, there's a lot of, I mean, that's a big, deep subject, development paying its own way. I think that the development had an opportunity to pay its own way, and that wasn't what the city wanted.
Okay.
And that they didn't want that solution.
Okay.
They wanted a different solution. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't what so it's a negotiation. And it's, you know, you got to go back and forth and you got to come to a solution. What's the mix of new development and community benefit that you're seeking, and how are you going to divide those costs? And I'm very heartened to see that it looks like they've kind of broken the cycle and they've gotten to a position where they'll put something before the voters that the voters can consider. And I think it would be very positive for the I don't live in Aspen, so I'm kind of a carpetbagger on these issues. I don't plan to electioneer for it. And I have no relationship whatsoever with any of the parties. But I think it would be really good for the community.
And you also asked this other question, though. This is going to go to the Aspen voters. Mm-hmm. Are Aspen voters going to be more or less likely to say yes to this development if council puts money behind it? So I'm curious what both of you think about that. You know, will the citizens say, yes, my council showed that they believe in it, and so I will go on to it too? Or will they say, I would have loved that, but not with my money, so I'm going to say no, even though I would have loved the development? You know, it's a great question.
It's an interesting question. My take is the former rather than the latter. I think that that the city getting behind it, demonstrating that the city is willing to participate and have some skin in the game. And I think Bill Sterling made a point that, you know, that there's some control related to having skin in the game as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're striking the right balance for this project. That's my sense.
Rick, do you have a read? Because I don't really think of a lot of our community as thinking me and my council are on the same team. You know, like oftentimes they're not.
Right, right. Well, I mean, public-private partnerships aren't anything new. They're done all over the country. I think I'm going to change the subject a little bit. But
be my guest.
The timing of this election in March, I have a feeling it's going to be great voter turnout because of Lift 1A coming up, not because people are running for council.
Okay.
And I really think the true measure of whether moving this up is successful will be when it's just a council election, because, you know, we're a ski town. I say everyone. I have a feeling voter turnout will be high because of that and not the election. Or not the council and mayoral election.
That's pretty ideal timing that you'll be voting on a skiing issue during the ski season.
Right. Now, what if we have a runoff in any of these, then it goes to April, which is kind of the off season. So we're just moving. Right. You know, there's no perfect solution here. I'm curious to see how it goes. But I'm really wondering if people are going to be able to wrap their brains around the issues and be the educated voters we'd like them to be. But the voters approved it, and more people in town. We're all for the most open democracy we can have. So
I'm so interested to see those turnout numbers. Also, yeah, I mean, it's such a tiny fraction of who will be using that new lift, that new area that will be this fate is in the hands of just Aspen voters, not Aspen, you know, residents, not Aspen, not Picken County voters, and not people who work in Aspen, literally just the people who are registered. So this decision is in the hands of just the couple people who are registered to vote in Aspen
now. Some are arguing this should be, you know, two questions about, you know, because they're just cramming everything into this ballot question, from conservation easements to waivers, not waivers, but variances, and so on. So,
yeah.
Paul, do you think the public has been properly involved in the process of talking about the redevelopment of the 1A side?
The short answer is yes. I think there's been a lot of discussion for a long period of time. There's been this kind of contextually, When Steve Barwick delivered his famous memo to the council, he articulated as kind of a reset that there isn't enough time. Hmm. You know, but the fact of the matter is that there's been an ongoing discussion about this matter for a couple of years now, and very well reported in both papers. Lots of opportunity for input and information gathering. And so, yeah, the issue has been completely vetted, I think.
You are listening to Valley Roundup on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bechtesh. This week I'm joined by Paul Minter, columnist with the Aspen Daily News, Rick Carroll, managing editor with the Aspen Times, and Matthew Bennett, reporter with the Glenwood Springs Post-Independent. Stay with us. Rick, I'm going to go to another ongoing story. We've been looking at the Aspen School District a lot this fall. Mm-hmm. The Aspen Times got a letter right before the school year started, and the school district got a similar letter that their HR director, Elizabeth Hodges, had some legal troubles. This mm-hmm. is kind of when it all came about. And we're at the point now where she's been put on paid administrative leave. And mm-hmm. The recommendation from her boss, Superintendent John Malloy, is that she not retain her job.
Correct. I actually got a hold of Elizabeth's contract today because I wanted to understand this better in terms of the process.
Great.
And so the way it is looking now is that, yeah, Malloy's recommended her termination.
Okay.
And so part her contract says that the superintendent can't just arbitrarily mm-hmm. make this decision. And so she's allowed to have a hearing before the Board of Education. And the board can hire an independent hearing office to hold the hearing and make the findings and then make a recommendation to the board. So the question is the board going to do that
okay.
or are they going to do this themselves?
So she did find out that the contract was recommended to be terminated by mm-hmm. Superintendent Malloy. She requested, she gets to opt into the second review, and she has done that.
Basically, it sounds like she's exercising her right to do this, and this is just one of the steps in the process. You know, that letter that we got in July, and John, it said that she had been disbarred, and it showed her the record of disbarment, and that's all it provided.
Okay.
So,
do we know or has any part of the internal investigation that the school board ordered been made public on which Malloy is basing his recommendation?
It has not been made public.
So that's still a black box.
Yeah.
And it's an about face. You know, these letters came out, the first stories hit the paper, and parents and some teachers came forward right away and said, mm-hmm. yeah, at least put her on leave mm-hmm. or we're not comfortable. Why is she still working here? And mm-hmm. the superintendent and the board said, we're keeping her. We stand fully behind her. This is in the past. It's in a different state.
The president of the board.
Okay. Yes. Mm-hmm. So but, this is a flip. Do you think that is based on more evidence, or do you think that's based on public outcry?
Probably both. It's their law firm that conducted an investigation. Not to toot our own horn, but independently, the Times learned about this grand jury indictment, which was not part of the letter.
Okay.
The judgment, which led to a bankruptcy, which was filed to stave off this $1 million judgment. More's come out, and you also have to. She's still she's on paid leave now. Now imagine if you're an employee at the school district, and your personal information has been compromised since the school district knew about all of this. Well, what is the exposure there? You have to think if mm-hmm. if my data was breached. Yeah. After the school received that letter and after they heard that she was a convicted for a misdemeanor for deceptive business practices, there's several adversary proceedings in a bankruptcy case about concealing assets.
Mm-hmm. It's significant that she's the HR director. She's not
the
another
HR
teacher.
Director, so she has access to, or she had, I don't know if she still enjoys
okay.
access, but to medical records, right. Social Security, all of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she's still with them. And so if I was the school district, I would be nervous that what if something happened between when we learned it and now?
Right. What landmines are out there that we
right.
still haven't been, that still have not been discovered.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. While she's on paid administrative leave, the HR duties are being split between John Malloy and his assistant, Angela
yes.
Rittenhouse.
Correct.
So right now, if you have an issue with someone in the school, especially if it's with John mm-hmm. Malloy, who do you go to?
you'll have to ask them. You go to Angela or John.
Yeah.
So.
You also mentioned the bankruptcy case. One asset that might be up for discussion there is a $30,000 loan from the school district.
Correct.
To Elizabeth, because they have a program where they'll help you put a down payment on a house.
Correct.
Here in the Valley. So we don't know yet if the school district, if the public dollars will come back or not.
Correct. Now, if it's a secured loan, which means that the property would be held as collateral, then the school district should be in good shape when it comes to that. If it was unsecured, that's different. It could be discharged. She has not filed that. But you would think that it's a secured loan.
We don't know a meeting date for that board of directors review of
no,
this decision?
Okay. Do not.
Matthew, my favorite store is causing some problems in Glenwood Springs. I dress for less as often as possible. I don't quite understand, but the Glenwood Springs Mall is at 90% vacancy, whereas the rest of retail spaces in Glenwood Springs are at 3%. So there's something going on within the mall where stores aren't moving in there, and it seems like somehow it's tied to the Ross Dress for Less lease. What is in that lease that's keeping other stores from moving into the mall?
You know, we haven't been able to see an actual physical copy of the lease, but I spoke to the city manager, Deborah Figueroa, and she told me that the mall owner, Frank Wood, reached out to her, the city, and basically was requesting help. And long story short, evidently Ross, Dress for Less, and their, as the anchor tenant in their agreement, there was a study done by Ricker Cunningham out of Littleton, and it said... basically, the terms made it all but impossible for the mall to freely manage the mall properties in a manner appropriate for the market. And basically, what that's saying is no competitors were moving in. So a lot of people in the community are upset that such a deal was signed, and some people are questioning why the city needs to form this urban renewal authority as opposed to just sort of let the free market run its course. But then there's a large majority of people who just kind of see it as, you know, a get-out-of-free-jail card for the owner, if you will, who obviously signed a bad business deal, and they just want to see it developed. You know, I've heard everything from Trader Joe's to reopening the mall. And I myself, I used to live in West Glenwood when I first moved up here, and I always frequented the West Glenwood Mall, and it was, you know, it's no secret that it's more or less a Ross Dress for Less.
So I'm not exactly clear why they wouldn't want more businesses in there, like, you know, just more foot traffic in my mind means more people coming to your store. But and some of these things that have been mentioned, I didn't even hear about the Trader Joe's, but how exciting, or a movie theater back in there. The city council, what decision did they make where all of a sudden we might be starting to see some of these things come to the mall?
So, right. They did something that at least I haven't really seen in cities with a population of just over 10,000, they basically formed this urban renewal authority, which has a lot of legal muscle. We'll see how much it plans on exercising in the months as they unfold. But basically, it's going to be the city council, I believe representatives from the county, the school district, and also sort of the taxing body that is the Glenwood Springs Mall. And the city manager made it clear that the city has no intention of purchasing the property, but basically you have to have what's called 4 of the 11 blights, according to the law, and the assessment done by Cunningham, I believe, said that there were 10 of 11. So that alone was a really deciding and driving factor, and I just think, again, it's an area that people really want to see developed, whether it be bringing back stores to the mall, however that'll get done, or, you know, completely replacing it. Every idea has kind of been talked about. But right now, the big story seems to be that Ross Dress for Less, they're the anchor tenant, and they signed, Mr. Wood evidently signed the lease agreement. And as one of the counselors, you know, pointed out, it seemed like everybody kind of had their hands tied. The counselor from West Glenwood, Rick Voorhees, even said, you know, I'm going to vote for it, but he just had wished there had been a sort of modicum of common sense back whenever that contract was signed, because, you know, the goofballs party store owner Randy D. Herrera said, you know, the main foot traffic he was getting now was from the DMV, kind of right there. And, you know, when you think of a mall, sort of the last thing you think of is a DMV. So
yeah, that threw me off when I first got here. Somehow I'm proud that our mall is blighted in 10 of 11 ways. But I suppose that that is not the thing to strive for in the future. And there's ideas like that a restaurant is now what restaurants and bars are now what are the anchor tenants at a lot of successful malls in the community and communities nationwide. So maybe that's something to go for. All right, well, that is all the time we have. I want to thank Rick Carroll, managing editor with the Aspen Times, Paul Mentor, columnist with Aspen Daily News, and Matthew Bennett, reporter with Glenwood Springs Post Independent, for joining me today on Valley Roundup. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You are listening to Valley Roundup on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bechtesh. Valley Roundup is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.
Support for Aspen Public Radio comes from Balcom and Green PC, a full-service law firm with offices in Glenwood Springs, Aspen, and Basalt, providing advice and solutions for their clients' legal needs throughout Western Colorado for more than 60 years. Learn more at balcomgreen.com.
This is Aspen Public Radio, broadcasting on KAJX Aspen and KCJX Carbondale.